I want to start with, what's your first memory of doing something mathematical?
You know, I always liked math. My dad was an undergrad math major, but didn't wind up doing anything with that. He wound up being in sales for many years. But what this meant was, every night after dinner, my dad would sit down with me and my brother, and we would go over our math homework. And anything that was wrong, he would sort of stop us and make us work the problem for him. And so for me, math was social time with dad for a very long time. And then I have memories of, so I remember being in the fifth grade, and this was when we were learning how to multiply fractions. And my teacher at the time, Mr. Boots, he came over and sort of knelt down at my desk, and he showed me how to cross cancel before this was going to be a lecture for the class, because he could see that I was getting this. And so that's a very strong memory. I also remember being in the sixth grade, and during exams, our teacher, Mr. Peshman, would walk over, and he'd sort of, again, so kneel down by me, and he'd say, I put this problem on the exam just to see if you wouldn't get 100% this time. So I always felt very supported and very encouraged and motivated. I had teachers that noticed that I guess I had some sort of natural talent and really tried to foster that. And I never felt that it was strange that I liked mathematics, or that I, you know, shouldn't like mathematics because I was a girl. I mean, this never came up, ever. Now, I don't have any of these stories that lots of my undergrad professors have of, oh, I remember going on long car trips and factoring the numbers on license plates. I grew up with a brother, the three boys who lived next door, the three girls who lived across the street. So, you know, I wasn't spending time after school doing any sort of recreational mathematics. I was often on a bicycle or on a slide or a swing or something like this. But I always enjoyed doing math. And so that's, I guess, my first few memories of really liking
something. So where did you grow up?
I grew up outside of Los Angeles, about 30 miles east of Los Angeles. My parents still live in the same town that I grew up in, and I went to public school for all of my education. I was very lucky. The high school that I went to was less than 10 years old, and it turned out that all of the math and science teachers happened to have master's degrees. And so, you know, we had AP classes. I had access to lots of mathematics that I might not have had at another school. So in fact, I took 2 years of calculus. So this was when the BC calculus class was just sort of starting in some places. And I took the AP exam the very first year that they required the graphing calculator. And so, you know, when I see my students now who show up at LMU and enroll in Calc 1, which is very rare these days, but there still are some students, and they're struggling, and I think to myself, gosh, you know, I had 2 years of this, and we're trying to cram this all into a semester, or, you know, a full year to get the full sequence, and it just makes me realize that, you know, right, I can look at a problem and integrate by parts three times, and this is not a problem because I had 2 years of doing these problems. So we spent 3 weeks on the chain rule, and we have 50 minutes together at LMU.
So with all this success in mathematics in high school and so on, was mathematics part of your college plans?
You know, it's funny. I'm thinking back to that time. I don't remember thinking, I'm going to go to college and I'm going to major in X. So I remembered getting the thing in the mail from the university saying, okay, it's time to pick your classes for the fall. And the natural thing to do was to take another math class, because that's what you did, right? In high school, you had math every year. You had English every year. I liked math, so this wasn't a problem. But so I just, you know, enrolled in multivariable calculus. But I'm also a musician, and so I wanted to make sure that I got to take the music classes that I wanted as well. And so for a while, I was debating whether or not I wanted to major in math or music. I wound up transferring after my first year as an undergrad. So my very first year, I was at the University of San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it turned out that if you weren't a music major, your opportunities to play were not so great. And I wasn't sure at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I decided to do was I decided to leave. And so I went to the University of Redlands. And they have a school of music there.
Mm-hmm.
And what was great was they were so welcoming just to anyone who wanted to be involved. So I got to play in the band, the orchestra, I sang in the choir, I got to take whatever theory classes I wanted, whatever history classes I wanted. One of the nice things about Redlands is that people can design their own majors.
Mm-hmm.
And so I toyed for a semester with, you know, having some combined math music major.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized because the two majors were so prescribed in terms of their requirements,
mm-hmm.
I would really just be having a double major.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, you know, I want to be involved in music because this is something I enjoy, not because I necessarily want a degree in
mm-hmm.
it. So I think I had completed all the requirements with the exception of the junior and senior recitals. But I had taken all the literature, music
mm-hmm.
literature classes and theory and
mm-hmm.
ear training and lessons
mm-hmm.
and things like that.
What instrument were you?
I play the clarinet.
Uh-huh.
And I still play. So there's a wind ensemble through a local community college in Santa Monica that I play with. And it's fantastic because our conductor is actually friends with someone who I went to high school with,
mm-hmm.
and he's a graduate of UCLA. And so basically our band consists of graduates of UCLA
mm-hmm.
who have either become music teachers or are some sort of professional who want to keep playing. The people that sit on either side of me are a physicist from UCLA, so he's continuing
mm-hmm.
in his lab there, and someone with a law degree.
Mm-hmm.
And so the two of us, you know, just sit and chat during rehearsal, and this is common. You know, there's two MDs in the saxophone
mm-hmm.
section. There are a couple of engineers, so it's a great place to be able to play, but also have good conversations.
And probably a nice change of pace from everything else you do.
Yes, yes. And this was something that was important to me as an undergrad. That, you know, when I was struggling with that real analysis homework or the topology homework, I found what worked best for me was to just stop working,
mm-hmm.
pick up my instrument, go to the practice room for an hour, and then I, you know, killed two birds with one stone. I wound up playing better the next day, and also I had ideas for how to solve my homework problems.
But you were, at the same time, focusing on mathematics more and more.
I was certainly a math major,
mm-hmm.
But I was pretty busy as an undergrad. I was
mm-hmm.
an RA. I was involved in some service organizations.
Mm-hmm.
I had all of these musical opportunities. So certainly I was taking a couple of math classes
mm-hmm.
every semester,
mm-hmm.
but I completely took advantage of the fact that I was at a liberal arts school.
Mm-hmm.
I took this fantastic Shakespeare class that was team taught by a literature professor and someone in the drama department.
Uh-huh.
So not only did we read everything, but then we were acting
mm-hmm.
things out, and she would help us, and we staged everything. So I had quite a few interesting
mm-hmm.
classes. I had a class called Death and Dying,
mm-hmm.
also the History of Love, which
mm-hmm.
fortunately came after Death and Dying.
But that was coming to an end, so how did you make your decisions about graduate school?
Yeah, so there was a time that I couldn't decide. I actually applied to graduate school in musicology
mm-hmm.
also. I had known for years that I'd wanted to be a teacher. My parents every so often will pull out the picture of me from the fourth grade on career day that I was dressed up as a teacher, and there's a picture of me sitting behind my fourth grade teacher's desk,
mm-hmm.
you know, grading papers or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew that I wanted to teach, and
mm-hmm.
you know, after a lot of reflection, I thought I don't want to be a band director, because
mm-hmm.
for me, playing in the band and being a member of an ensemble, just it has just such positive associations. And I thought, gosh, I want to keep it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to wind up in a school or a school district where, you know, music isn't supported or we're losing funding or things like this. And for me, playing in music was just, I didn't want to be evaluated for it. And I think this is why I didn't declare myself as a music major. I didn't want to have to give a performance my junior and senior year where it was going to be critiqued.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to play because I love it.
Mm-hmm.
And I got such joy out of tutoring mathematics as an undergrad. We would have this room in the math department where some math majors would sit, and it was just drop-in tutoring. And it was so rewarding to explain to someone something and have them say, oh, I get it, let me try the next one. And I thought, okay, you know, I want to teach mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't just that, you know, I could have certainly left and taught at the high school level
mm-hmm.
at this point. But as I progressed throughout the major, you learn more and more interesting and exciting math. And I thought, what else is there that I don't know? You know, I want to see what is the mathematics that's out there after an undergrad education. And this is always a story I share with my students who are going on to grad school, because I find that lots of my students say things like, oh, I'm going to go to graduate school and I'm going to do my dissertation in field X. And I think, but you haven't even seen, you know, all of these other things that we can't teach you here. Don't, you know, that's fine to feel that way, but be open to the other really cool stuff
mm-hmm.
that you're going to see.
So how did your choice of graduate university come about?
Yeah, so I remember my last year as an undergrad that one of the professors that I'd had for many classes, he was talking to us about grad school, and he referred to it as the most difficult thing that he had ever done in his life. And I thought, huh, if I'm going to do the most difficult thing that I've ever done, I don't want to do it someplace that I have to shovel snow.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to limit my search to California. And I visited schools and I talked to a bunch of students. And I maybe did too much even. I went to the math department websites and would just pick names of graduate students and send them an email.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? They all wrote me back. And I asked them just to tell me about the department, the atmosphere,
mm-hmm.
how collaborative it was.
Mm-hmm.
Were there professors that weren't taking students? You know, what were people doing after they got their degrees?
Mm-hmm.
And so Riverside was the place that I just felt the most comfortable, like the place that I thought that I would be successful, where I could do my homework with other people and they weren't, you know, withholding solutions from each other. You know, they would tell me that people studied for the qualifying exams together and then would just pass that material on to the next class. And it just seemed like a place that was very supportive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I wound up going.
And then the next decision was thesis topic, advisor. And
that's right. And I, come, you know, year one and a half or two, I loved my Lie algebra class and topology.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought, well, great, there's someone in the department who does each of those. There was Dr. Chari, who studied Lie algebras, and there was Dr. Lin, who studied knot theory.
Mm-hmm.
And both of these were just very, very exciting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And the knot theorist had 5 students already.
Uh-huh.
The Lie algebraist had 3.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was John Bias,
mm-hmm.
who I had had a few seminars with, who was hands down the best instructor that I had had
mm-hmm.
in my first couple of years, and whose enthusiasm about mathematics, it was just contagious.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would chat with him, and the way that he tells this story is, oh, I knew that you were going to be my student in year one, whereas this to me was not at all clear. And I remember talking to him at some point, and he said, if you could do your thesis on whatever you wanted to do, what would it be? would it be something, you know, related to music? I said, that would be fantastic. And he said, you know, I'm really sorry that I don't have enough musical background for us to do something like that together, but, you know, but let's see if we can find something else. And I thought, this is the guy. I mean, this is the person. If that was his offer. And so he asked me what fields I liked, and I told him what I just told you, you know, Lie algebra is not theory. He said, great, we'll find something that lets you use both of those. And that's exactly what wound up happening.
So you got to combine both of those and
yeah,
made it your own.
So at the time, John was very interested in this new field called categorification.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, he was interested in asking physical questions. How can we generalize notions about physics to another dimension? And of course, the mathematics behind lots of physics is Lie theory.
Mm-hmm.
And so it turned out to generalize that, you wind up referring to things that people know about braids and knotted
mm-hmm.
surfaces and things like this. And so it was amazing. It was fantastic. These wound up being connected to each
mm-hmm.
other, and I got to play with both.
Yeah. Were you getting chances to teach in this period?
We were, yes. So all of us had TA ships, so we were TAs for classes. But in my, I think it was my third year, a couple of the visiting instructors wound up not coming back, or I can't remember exactly what the issue was, but someone in the department came and found a couple of us and said, would you guys be willing to teach the basic algebra class as your TA ship for this quarter? And this was Math 3, for which the students got no credit towards graduation, but if they came in underprepared for mathematics, they would take this, for which they got no units, and then they would go on and take Math 5, which is college algebra, and they would actually get units for. So this was the first time teaching my own class, and it was fantastic. I mean, the material was not very inspiring, but it was great. And then I was really lucky that I knew the chair of the math department at Pomona College, which is
mm-hmm.
one of the Claremont colleges, about 20 minutes down the highway from Riverside. And I think this was maybe my fourth year of grad school. They were in a bind. They needed someone to cover a couple calculus classes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wound up working it out with the math department that in lieu of being a TA, they let me teach over at Pomona. So
mm-hmm.
I got to teach Calc 1 and Calc 2.
Mm-hmm.
Over at Pomona College as a grad student.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I finished at Riverside, I think I had been the primary instructor of maybe 7 or 8 classes
mm-hmm.
because we could teach in the summer as well.
Right.
Yeah.
So now you have to either do a postdoc or look for a job.
That's true, yes. And, you know, when I went to grad school, for me this was a means to an end. It was, I want to teach mathematics,
mm-hmm.
and the research is just something that I have
mm-hmm.
to do. But then I met John, and like I said, his enthusiasm for math is just contagious,
mm-hmm.
and he gave me an area that I just wound up loving and was so excited about it that I thought, yeah, I want to keep doing this. So I applied for both postdocs and tenure-track positions
mm-hmm.
at liberal arts colleges.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that ultimately I wanted to wind up in a place that focused on undergraduates.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I got a couple of bites from postdoc
mm-hmm.
folks, you know, people saying, oh, we'd love to have you, but this year we're hiring in Rishi
mm-hmm.
Flows.
Uh-huh.
and that's not you. So so I wound up, I was very lucky. I had some wonderful interviews at different schools, and wound up at Loyola Marymount.
Mm-hmm.
The people there are fantastic, just so thoughtful about their teaching, so willing to share ideas, and I just felt so welcome there and so at home there. So So I started there the fall after I finished, and then a wonderful opportunity came up. I was given the opportunity to go to Ohio State for a year as one of the Ross postdocs. I think they had a lot of Vigor money at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to my department chair and I said, you know, I have this wonderful opportunity, and I'm the first person that you've hired since, you know, in the past N years,
mm-hmm.
that hasn't had a postdoc before coming here. I really feel like this would be great for me to get my research trajectory just
mm-hmm.
off the ground and do it by myself without my advisor. And so they let me have a year's leave of absence. And so
mm-hmm.
I went to Ohio State, and it was great for me to
mm-hmm.
really get everything started and underway and feel comfortable doing
mm-hmm.
things by myself before coming back to LMU.
So how did your involvement in the MA come about?
Yeah, so I did all of my undergrad and grad work in the Southern California section.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had been going to MAA section meetings as an undergrad.
Oh.
One of the section meetings was actually at Redlands, where I was
mm-hmm.
an undergrad.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was familiar with all of the people. So, you know, to me, now that Francis Sue and Art Benjamin and all of these people in our section know my name, is just incredible to me, because they were rock stars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were the ones who were giving the talks and introducing the speakers,
mm-hmm.
and they were the big names in our section.
Mm-hmm.
And so for years I would go to the section meetings. I started as a grad student going to the joint meetings, occasionally go to MathFest. But I also really credit Steve Kennedy and Deanna Hansberger, who
mm-hmm.
run a women's program.
Oh, yeah.
For getting me sort of plugged into the mathematical community, because anytime that I would see them at one of the national
mm-hmm.
meetings, they would introduce me to whoever they happened to be speaking
mm-hmm.
to at the time. And so I just got to meet a bunch of people,
mm-hmm.
and so I learned about Math Horizons, and then I learned, oh, you should apply to Project Next,
mm-hmm.
and oh, there are these, you know, other programs that
mm-hmm.
the MAA sponsors. And so it was just this you know, normal progression, I think, of meeting people who then introduced me to the opportunities at the MAA.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was a Project Next Fellow, which was a phenomenal experience. I'm now on the editorial board of Math Horizons. And so it's, I've been a part of a Tensor grant. You know, I feel like the MAA has just been there for my entire career, supporting
mm-hmm.
the things that I'm interested in doing.
And an award-winning author, too.
Well, thank you. Yes.
So that also must have been part of your background. I mean, not everyone can write good papers.
You know, I had great collaborators.
Ah.
Yeah, so I actually find writing very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like having collaborators, because it's much easier to write something that's garbage, have your collaborator
mm-hmm.
sort of revise it, and then you reread it and make it better, and continually
mm-hmm.
make things better and better. Yeah.
Now, you also have a connection with MSRI. Are you doing something for them, or is that continuing? Or
yeah, so when was this? So I guess the 2012-13 year,
mm-hmm.
I was one of the associate directors who was responsible for any of the outreach that MSRI
mm-hmm.
did. So of course their main mission is mathematics and research, but of course they're also interested in outreach to the public, to underrepresented
mm-hmm.
groups. They're very heavily involved with supporting math circles
mm-hmm.
for students, and so this is what all fell under the umbrella of the position that I had.
Mm-hmm.
Julia Robinson festivals, math circles. MSRI has an annual workshop on critical issues in math education.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things, as you're right, sort of fell
mm-hmm.
under my responsibility. And it was great, because this allowed, as much as I love teaching, and I certainly missed being in the classroom the year that I was at MSRI,
mm-hmm.
but something I'm also very passionate about is helping different populations of students, in particular women and first-generation college students, underrepresented students,
mm-hmm.
And I think that's because I was so supported.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every year for the past few years, I've been interviewed for the AWM essay
mm-hmm.
contest.
Mm-hmm.
And the question I always get is, you know, what obstacles did you have to overcome? Or
mm-hmm.
what challenges did you face being a woman in math?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm fortunate to be able to say none.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that that's not the case
right.
for so many women. And I have peers, people who are younger than I am
mm-hmm.
even. And I'm a little bit appalled that, you know, I still hear these awful stories of women who approach someone they want to work with and have that person say, what are you even doing here? You know, no, I'm not going to work with you. You don't even belong
mm-hmm.
To be a grad student. And so, you know, being at MSRI
mm-hmm.
enabled me to work with these sort of programs that are aimed to address this.
It sounds as if you've kept yourself very busy.
Yeah, it's almost too busy, I think. Yeah.
But you can manage to juggle all of that.
Well, sometimes. Actually, I joke that 2014 was deemed the year of Alyssa. And so
mm-hmm.
I have actually, for the first time, and it was very hard for me, said no to many things.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you're familiar with the talk that Joe Gallion gives to
yes.
the Project Next, yes, Project Next fellows. That he says, you know, just say yes.
Yes.
And so for years, I said yes, I said yes, I said yes. And at some point, a very good colleague of mine in the math department at LMU came by my office and he said, you know, Alyssa, no is a complete sentence. And I thought, well, yeah, you know,
mm-hmm.
it'll give me more time to focus on some other things. So, for example, I'm the very proud aunt of a amazingly intelligent 3-year-old nephew.
Ah.
And my brother and sister-in-law live very close to where I live. And so being able to spend time with him has become a high priority.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, saying no to, oh, will you, you know, direct this research project
mm-hmm.
at this RRU this summer
mm-hmm.
was a little bit easier because
mm-hmm.
I thought, well, you know, I get to go to the park with this
right.
little guy. Yeah.
So what are your sort of current goals, though? Or what are you aiming to achieve this year?
Yeah, so one of the nice things about being at a Jesuit institution is that so many things are supported in terms of what you want to do with your students in the classroom. And so this past fall, I taught our just sort of our quantitative reasoning, or the core mathematics class that non-math, non-science students
mm-hmm.
take at the university. And a couple of friends of mine at other Jesuit institutions had taught the analogous class at their institutions and had added a community-based learning component. And so last summer, I had done a bunch of reading, and it turns out that people say that students who are engaged in this sort of outreach wind up being more engaged in the classroom
mm-hmm.
and the material of the classroom. So I taught this course and added in a bunch of reading about just general math literacy.
Mm-hmm.
So we read this book called Proofiness.
Oh,
yes. Yes. Which they loved. And
mm-hmm.
they would come to class really engaged and wanting to talk about this. And gosh, I didn't know that, you know, when I was seeing this or reading this in the paper or watching this commercial that really all of that wasn't actually
mm-hmm.
correct. And so then they were on the lookout for things, and it was great. And they would come to me and they'd say, you know, my younger brother or sister said this to me, and I pointed out to them,
mm-hmm.
that actually, no, you know, you have to be careful. So we did that, and they also were required to tutor math.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere in the area that they would like for 15 hours over the semester. Some of them chose local elementary schools, but others chose boys and girls clubs. And the requirement was that they worked with populations that were underrepresented in mathematics, which isn't really hard to find in the Los Angeles area, since it's, you know, we have such a diverse population. And it was met with lots of resistance, of course, at first, because this was a fall semester. Most of my students were freshmen. This was their start to college. They were already worried about their time commitments.
Mm-hmm.
and some of them didn't have cars, and how am I going to additionally do this other thing? But reading their final reflections for the course just made my heart sing. I mean, just so many of them said, you know what, I'm going to keep working with these students next semester, even though I don't have to, or, you know, I feel more confident helping my younger brother or sister, or, you know, when I become a parent, I'm not going to try not to say things like, oh, I found math hard, or I don't like math. It was so rewarding. And so LMU right now is in a transitional state with our core courses. And so what I'd like to do is put together a description of this class so it goes through the right channels to be approved as an engaged learning course for students to take to satisfy the, this engaged learning requirement.
You're also going to be becoming even more involved with Project Next.
I know, I'm thrilled. I can't wait. And I'm so excited to have the opportunity to work with Dave Kung. I mean, he's fantastic. And and just the rest of the team, you know, Matt DeLong, I mean, I've known about him for years and years, and Julia and Anthony, I mean, I couldn't have asked for a better group of people to work with. And, you know, I feel like I got so much from Project Next. I mean, I have collaborators. I frequently will email people and ask, you know, what did you do in your class? I mean, and the ability to give back to this program is just fantastic. I can't wait.
You have a lot of enthusiasm about everything.
Well, thank you.
All right, so just to finish off then, where do you picture yourself in 5 years from now? I could say 10 years, but the way things are changing, 5 years might be a more reasonable
window. You know, it's right, it's so hard to think about that, because if you would have told me 3 years ago that I would have been at MSRI, I would not have believed that. 3 years ago, I was actually here. I was on sabbatical at the NSA, which was also, you know, if you would have, in my second or third year teaching, told me that that's what I would have done, you know, being the very, very pure trained mathematician that I am, who knows about category theory, I mean, how much more abstract can you get, right? I would have not believed that I would have been at the NSA. Some of the things that I do want to be involved in are more local to LMU, that I really want to be involved with this transition that we're in right now of these new core courses. So for example, we're introducing these first year seminars that all first year students take. And I would love to design one of these or find a colleague in my college to team teach something like this. Also, another thing that I love about being at LMU is the opportunity to teach abroad. So we have a program specific to engineering, science, math students in Germany. And I've taught in that program twice before in the summer, and so I'd love to go back and do that again. But just working with our students, you know, now that I've been away, I was away for 2 years, so I was here at the NSA, and then I was at MSRI. And so it was really hard for me at graduation this year to not know any of our students who were walking by and not have a relationship with them. And that's something I definitely missed, you know, working with our math club, arranging events with them. You know, I did a senior honors thesis with one of our students who was in the honors program once. And just all of these things that we get to do as faculty members that I haven't done for the past 2 years, this is what I'm really looking forward to.
And just also to go back to one earlier thing, I mean, clearly you have an interest in music. Are there other interests?
Yeah, so I love being outside. And so, you know, living in California, growing up in California has been great for that. You know, there's never been an activity that I've said, you know, no, I don't want to try. So there was a period of time that I decided surfing was the thing that I wanted to learn how to do next. And so I went to the math department, you know, I went to LMU and I was talking to my colleagues, and one of my colleagues who serves every morning, he says to me, well, you know, when you fall off, you need to cover your head because you don't want to get hit by the fin, and you need to do this so that, you know, you don't wind up going unconscious underwater. And I thought, huh, maybe I don't want to try surfing anymore. But I like running and biking and swimming, and in fact, I signed myself up for one of these like mini sprint triathlons this summer, so I'll do that. Another favorite thing to do is baking, which my students appreciate. And in fact, this was an activity that I didn't get to do so much at the agency or MSRI because, you know, adults are concerned about what they eat, right? They're concerned about calories, they're concerned about, you know, maybe developing diabetes, I mean, all of these things, whereas 17, 18, 19-year-olds, they can eat whatever they want. Mm-hmm. And so when I show up with, oh, I wanted to try these, you know, caramel brownies, okay, you know, they're willing to do that. So, yeah, so I like baking a lot. I wish I had more time to practice clarinet. You know, it's hard to look back on being an undergrad when I was taking lessons and practicing, you know, an hour every day and thinking, oh, I was so good then. And now it's, you know, I'm lucky if I get to play one more time other than the weekly rehearsal that we have. So, yeah, so these are all things that I occupy my time with.
Unless you want to add something that I neglected to look at, it's covered all kinds of things.
Yeah, I can't think of anything.
Well, good. Okay. Well, thank you.
Yes, thank you. It was a pleasure.
Good.